Rob Foggo is someone who is quite well known to people living in regional South Australia, and for those living in the southeastern Riverland, he's known for his most recent work as CEO of AC Care, also known as Anglican Community Care Incorporated. After about 35 years in the sector, Rob is retiring, and Small Changes' Ross Womersley sat down with Rob to chat and reflect on his work and the changes he's seen in the sector, and started off by asking Rob what led him into human services in the first instance.
Yeah, going back a number of years, I initially was training as a secondary school teacher, and I got a really useful degree in a Bachelor of Arts at Adelaide Uni and went on to do my graduate diploma of teaching. And I think I had about 2 weeks prac teaching, and I thought, this isn't for me. So left halfway through that final year of my teaching diploma and went back to country and got a job. My first real job was with... employer was Department for Community Welfare, but it was way back then. It was a joint DCW Education Department project, a precursor to the combined department that is now defunct again, but working in a childcare centre, kindergarten on a school ground that had social workers, toy libraries, mothers and babies, nurses, all operating out of it. It was one of three in the state and the only one in country, South Australia.
It almost sounds like a Communities for Children's site.
Very much so. In fact, I think it was an outstanding venture and combined very much community service focus and whatever came through the door, usually with a child focus through the childcare centre or the kindergarten and or school, we were able to either address the issues or refer to someone who could.
And without wanting to put a date on it, when was that?
Thanks very much, Ross. That would have been, to be honest, I can't tell you, I'm hopeless with dates, but that would have been over probably 35 years ago. Yeah, so in answer to your question, I sort of was initially training as a teacher, but then fell into community service type work because the opportunity was there and loved it. And while I was working, and that was at Nangmorrie, little pine industry town in the Limestone Coast, when my time there was coming to an end and I was studying social work externally, I came to Adelaide and to finish my social work studies. And while I was here in Adelaide, also worked in another combined Department of Community Welfare Education Department project, which was at the Norwood Project Centre, where we work with behaviourally difficult kids from the school sector came to us. And there was a mix of social workers and teachers at the complex. And again, that worked very well.
So you didn't like the practical side of teaching, but then fairly quickly you find yourself involved in working in probably much more intense ways with people who were vulnerable one way or another in our education system. How do you explain the differences in those two situations and what made one work for you and the other not?
Yeah, it was interesting that I, in the end, made the call, I don't want to be a teacher. But my first two jobs, or real jobs, were both back in the school system in a way, which was quite ironic. I think for me the difference was I wasn't working in a classroom, and that many times I might have been one-on-one with young people or children, and even babies. Back at the childcare days, I think I was one of three male childcare workers in the state 30-odd years ago. But it was quite ironic that in both instances I ended up back in a school environment. And maybe that was destined to be. But at the end of the day, there was far more of a community focus and working with those most marginalised kids in that system and addressing whatever issues they may have had.
What was it that led to those kids being disadvantaged or marginalised at that point in time?
Yeah, look, in reflecting over my career, to be honest, I've said thanks to the family I was born into, really, that for me it goes back to those very early days of family. And the old saying of give me the child of seven, I think it is, and I'll give you the adult. And my experience in the workforce, that was very true. And there were children at the childcare centre that I worked with that I could see had issues, and all the families had issues that needed to be addressed, and that if they weren't, down the track, these kids would come back into the child protection system. And sadly, some of them did. So in some ways, I think it's luck in terms of the family you're born into. But those families too, what I found over my career, is give them the opportunity and they'll grab it and run with it. And particularly the young people, that I found what they were lacking mainly was opportunities. And if you're able to give them the opportunity, whether that's via employment or especially via education, I learned very early on at my childcare days the importance of education in terms of moving forward in a productive way, I guess, but getting out of that spiral or cycle of being in that marginalised world, education's so important. Yeah, so for me it was giving those kids those opportunities to move forward, and they grabbed them.
So reflecting on 35 years ago, what was the feeling around human services, and particularly the edge of human services that you were entering? Was it an exciting time? What were some of the ideologies in play? What was important to people?
For me, it was the importance of community. Like at the childcare centre, and as you describe it, it was almost a community centre way back in those early days. The way I used to describe it is, while my employer was Department for Community Welfare, my boss was the local board of management. And there was a local board made up of community members who ran the centre. While they weren't technically my employer, I very much saw them as my boss. And I guess moving forward in my career a bit later on, I in Mount Gambier, worked with young offenders down there, but very much from a work closely with community in terms of developing programs that met their needs and, as I said, provided opportunities. So for me, it was the importance of community as opposed to a government department or a non-government organisation for that point. And I guess around that collective impact that it needs a whole community working together to address a whole range of issues successfully.
So, Rob, somewhere in the scheme of things, 35 years have transpired since those early days of working the Norwood Project. How did you get from there to running one of the most important, successful community organisations in the southeast?
Yes, working in Norwood Project Centre, to be honest, my wife Denise and I were only here in Adelaide for 12 months, and sorry guys, but we realised city life wasn't for us. And so an opportunity came, again, still within Department for Community Welfare, to return to Mount Gambier, which is really our home country, working with young offenders down there. So I took that opportunity. And then after a number of years, restructures within the department, I thought, no, the focus is shifting here. It's time for me to move on. So I got a job with what was then a small organisation called Anglican Family Support Services. There was six staff in this organisation, very much Mount Gambier focused, a little bit in Millicent. It wasn't even an incorporated association, to be honest, way back then. Commenced work with them with a foster care focus, which is an area that I was very familiar with coming from government. And Anglican Family Support Services ran the foster care service in the Limestone Coast. So joined them all those years ago. Well, that was 25 years ago.
And what happened with your career from there?
It became apparent to me very quickly that with a smaller organisation, which Anglican Family Support Services was, the future meant that either an organisation had to get bigger, both in numbers and numbers of programs and numbers of staff, but also geographically in terms of the area it serviced, or disappear. From my point of view, foster care was a service that Anglican Family Support Services did very well, and we should continue it. State government put it out to tender, and for us to remain in the business, we had to also tender for Riverland and Murraylands. It was all one big region, which we did. At that same time, the Aboriginal community came to us and said, look, we want to care for our own children in our communities, but we don't have the experience or the skills to do that. Will you do it with us? So we also put in a separate tender together with the Aboriginal communities in Riverland, Murraylands and Limestone Coast, and won both tenders to deliver foster care across that larger region. Once we had a presence in Riverland and Murraylands, there were other opportunities. Some of the smaller NGOs in those communities also saw the benefits of being aligned with a larger organisation, and they amalgamated with us. One of those organisations was to do with homelessness in Limestone Coast, so we amalgamated with a small homelessness service in Limestone Coast, and then in turn tendered for and won those services in Murraylands and Riverland. So all those years ago, when I commenced, there was about six staff. We now have about 260 staff delivering a whole range of services, many of which complement foster care and particularly assists foster families, but also kids who are exiting care, and also the biological kids of those families of those kids. So a whole suite of services that put them together, yeah, meet the needs of probably the most, not probably, they are the most marginalised in our communities.
One of the things in there is the issue of mergers and collaborations, and of course the sector has been known for its capacity to collaborate, but the arrival of competitive tendering has in fact made that much more complicated. How have you experienced that trend over time? How impactful and in what ways has competitive tendering either strengthened or undermined the sector?
Well, that's a good question, Ross, and one that I think all organisations have struggled with over the years. Certainly competitive tendering can get in the way of organisations working together collaboratively, because you know down the track, gee, they might well be competing against us for our core business. But I think I can say that over the years we've tried to put the competitive tendering aside. It only becomes critical at the time when tenders go out. And after that time, once the decisions are made, you get on and work with all and sundry to get the best outcomes for those people we're working with. I guess one of my experiences over those years has been through the Peakbody CAFWA, Child and Family Welfare Association of South Australia. And what I was always really conscious of and very proud of, to be honest, that as members came in to meet, have a CAFWA meeting, and they were members from a whole range of non-government organisations who delivered services, they left their organisational hats at the door and came in and spoke for and on behalf of the most marginalised, particularly in that foster care area. So I think it can happen within the sector, that we can work together collaboratively, and collective impact is another important initiative that demonstrates that. Yeah, but it's still, if a tender comes up, there's still, it creeps in there, you'd have to say. But wherever possible, you try and put it to one side, but it's not always realistic.
What about the idea of regional organisations and the challenges that exist for regional organisations in contrast to those that operate in metropolitan Adelaide? You've been a champion of the country and a champion, rightly so, a champion of regional services. What are some of the particular issues that you think still confront regional services that mightn't be present for some of the metropolitan services?
Oh, look, I think one of the changes that's coming our way in the sector is around unit costing. And that's where traditionally with organisations like ours have had block funding. Here's X dollars, you go out and deliver a service to the community for that bundle of money. Now it's moving very much towards unit costing, where to work with one family you'll get X dollars type thing. I have some real concerns for country communities in that, and I'll give an example. And these figures won't be accurate, just an example. So AC Care, we might get $100 to work with one family in looking at some sort of early intervention work. So in Mount Gambier, we get $100. Go and do that work and we get $100 funding. There might be another family who's living in Keith, which is a two-hour drive one way. So you can spend 4 hours in the car to get that same $100. And my concern is that organisations will get to the point where it's just not sustainable and they cannot meet the needs of those community members who live way out in the boondocks. And yet the reality is, for that family in Keith, their needs are just as real as any other family that might live in metropolitan Adelaide, or for that matter in Mount Gambier.
So that's a good example of costs being likely to be more substantial depending on where the service is taking place. Are there positive things about working in a country region that your metropolitan cousins wouldn't necessarily experience?
Of course I'm going to say yes to that, Ross. And I reflect back on what I around the community support. And again, I'll give another example, that for our organisation in the Limestone Coast, every 2 years we have, not we don't have it, the community run a fundraiser, or the business community of the Limestone Coast have a fundraiser around homelessness, with the funds raised to go towards meeting the needs of people who are homeless, potentially homeless. And last year, in a one-day event and a luncheon, the room absolutely filled with business leaders in our community, well over $100,000 put on the table. So I think the links with community in the regional areas, and I mean the whole community, not just pockets, is a real plus.
How important is it that you're someone from community? Because I'm sure that one of the things that's enabled you to maybe open some of those doors or to maintain some of those relationships is that you've been in and of the community for a long time. How important do you think that is for being able to maintain services into the future?
Look, I believe it's important to be a member of the community you work in. Equally, I believe an organisation should be governed by the community that that organisation delivers services in. And that's a standout difference for our organisation, I think, in that at the governance level from our board of directors, geographically live in the area that we service, whether that's Riverland, Murraylands or Limestone Coast. Whereas a number of the other organisations that might be metropolitan based, at the governance level, absolutely the majority, if not 100% of board directors are from metropolitan Adelaide.
So why is that so important?
I think it comes back to a number of reasons, Ross. One is ownership of the organisation and for the community to feel committed that this is their organisation and that represents their community, their regional community, and they're not fly in, fly out, that this organisation represents their community. So it gives that ownership, gives that closer link to the community, the business leaders example I gave earlier. You know, they very much align themselves to AC Care. But I think the board members, if they come from the geography that the organisation serviced, also have a real knowledge of what the issues are in their community, and whether that's an isolated community or a big central regional city, they have knowledge of the community that that organisation's delivering services in and have a real commitment to meet the needs of that community.
Reflecting on your leadership journey, because in all sorts of ways you've emerged as a leader in your community, were there particular points in the journey where you were specifically influenced to take steps towards leadership and to build that?
Certainly when I started with AC Care, which was way back, and we've had a number of name changes, but I'll say AC Care, it was as a base grade worker, really, but fairly soon their manager, Helen Kinnear, moved on and I won that position. I've joked with board now that if the panel knew what was in my head, they mightn't have appointed me, because right from the get-go I was conscious of that need to grow as an organisation. In terms of leadership, which is your question, Ross, I honestly don't know. For me, it was something I think I just grew with the organisation. And one of the things that I always found important, because I'm not the font of all wisdom and there are skill areas I'm deficit in, to be honest. So for me, it was really critical with the staff that I had surrounding me. And so the growth and the services that AC Care have been able to deliver over these years isn't all about me, it's about a team. And that's where, for me, I think we've always had an outstanding staff team. And I was one of them, that every now and then I'd have to press a button and make a call, but most of the decisions are made by members of that team.
Can you think of some times where you had to make calls, and what was one of the most difficult calls that you ever recall having to make?
I'll give a couple of, not extremes, but some of the most difficult I found, and maybe whether it's to do with me as a person or not, were often to do with individual staff members or individual clients, that, you know, it was more to do with, you know these people, whether they're clients or staff, and sometimes decisions needed to be made which are, can be life-changing for those people. And that's a huge responsibility. And sometimes some of the decisions I've made personally I know is going to have an impact on a family, whether it's to do with employment, for example. They're tough because you know that they have big ramifications for that individual and their families. From an organisational point of view, I think some of the biggies are in relation to decisions around whether we do tender or we don't tender for a particular service. What is our core business? Who do we partner with? Do we partner with anyone? Those bigger calls are from that perspective. And when it comes to the overall strategy of the organisation, look, to be honest, that's developed as a staff team and also with the board around where the organisation is heading. So for me individually, it often had to do with decisions to do with other individuals, or those decisions to do with partnerships and or tenders, I guess.
I'm interested, I want to go back for a second to this question about church. AC Care retains its ties to the Anglican Church. How important is church in social services these days, and particularly in the context of AC Care, do you think?
Yes, AC Care, we have strong links. In fact, our founding body was the small Anglican parish in Mount Gambier over 30 years ago. Without that parish, we as an organisation wouldn't exist. I think history is really important, and I think AC Care will and always should remain a faith-based organisation linked to the Anglican Church. Am I an Anglican? No. But in terms of the values that our organisation stands for, and I think, and go back to the church as well, I think values of an organisation are key and absolutely vital, because they in fact determine not so much what the work is, but how our staff deliver on that. And for me, one of the key values that AC Care stands for is compassion. And for me, that's been a value that has driven me from the get-go. And compassion for me is to be able to truly, truly put yourself in someone else's shoes. And I think our staff really endeavour to do that. And that doesn't mean all decisions are easy. You still make hard calls. But if a hard call has to be made on a staff member or on a member of community, I try to think, now, if I was that person, how would I want this message delivered? So when I say compassion, some people think, oh, that's, you're just an easy touch. That doesn't mean that at all. What it does is determine how you work with people, respect them, and see them as equals.
So you talked about the way that the values of the church infiltrate, and you've attempted to kind of bring those into the presence in the organisation. Are there any other things that have come from having that tie to the church?
Look, I think, and I go around to a lot of the parishes in the Diocese of the Murray, which is the diocese we operate in, and it's on the Sundays, to the different parishes, and those people sitting in the pews very much take on board the work AC Care are doing and see it as their way of actually delivering and meeting the needs of the most marginalised in our community. And they really take that on board. And what I say when I go to those churches, if nothing else, pray for our work. But often they go a lot more than that. And we have a whole number of volunteers that come from the church sector. We have some of the donations that come via the church are very significant. But I think there's a number of parishes that have set up their own op shops, have set up their own emergency financial counselling or emergency relief type services, work in conjunction with us, but see that as their outreach to their community. Again, at that local level, those members of the parishes, they know their community, they know the issues that exist within their communities, and in many instances, they know the solutions to those issues as well, and they often just need an organisation like AC Care who can work with them on those solutions and address them, and so help those who are most marginalised.
So, again, reflecting on your time in human services, what do you think's been one of the most optimistic things to have happened across that time?
As I've been winding down these last few months, Ross, I've been reflecting a lot on my work and the career, and I invariably keep going back to the people that I work with, and some of my memorable moments have been with those clients that I've worked with. And I'll give an example. I was going to say a young lad, but I'll come to the age. When I was working with young offenders in Mount Gambier, and I work mainly with young males, and there's a number of them that I still see when around the place, but they're now no longer young. The lad I'm thinking about at the moment had lots of issues. He spent time in adult jails, a number of years in adult jails. But I knew when he came knocking at my door, there was an issue that he'd need some support on. And this is long after I stopped working with young offenders. 4 years ago, he came knocking on my door and his partner had just died. And he wanted me to go with him to view the body and things like that and to support him through that. And I'm focusing on this one because only 2 days ago, he gave me a phone call out of the blue. He now lives in New South Wales. And he was just ringing me to remind me that today, in fact, it's his 50th birthday. So it was a little gentle prod for his birthday. But it also pulled me back a bit, thinking, God, he's now 50. Yeah, which was amazing. So when I think of those memorable times and some of the real positive stuff, look, there's lots of things about the organisation AC Care I'm very proud of, and the work we do very proud of, but often I go back to individuals, either sometimes staff, sometimes clients, that for me give... That's what it's about. I think our work is about relationships, and I guess right through my career I've really endeavoured to have positive, open, honest, trustful relationships with people and work on developing those.
It brings to mind the issue of working in a small community and the fact that, you know, you might know someone when times are very difficult for them, and you might know someone across a lifetime, as you have with the man that you were talking about. And obviously the boundaries in some instances have to blur, and indeed you may well choose to blur them, and indeed that may well have been the thing that made the relationship powerful enough to help that person move from one circumstance to another. How difficult is that as a member of a local community, continuing to support people and being able to maintain the sensible relationship in the midst of having a professional role to fulfil and yet still wanting to be a local member of the community?
Yeah, living in a small rural community, that is an issue. Living in Mount Gambier all those years, I know there are young, well, not just young people, there were clients that I worked with over the years that knew where I lived. I would have to say in 100% of the cases they respected that and didn't come and take advantage of that in any way. I think 100%. I also think that I found that I would often, you know, I wouldn't go to the pub, for example. That if I went to the pub, as sure as anything, there'd be someone there that knew of me in a professional career, and not that I would go there and get raving drunk or anything, but I was always, it very much limited whom I socialised with and when and where, and I was always very conscious of that. It impacted on my family as well, my wife and my two girls, that in turn limited a bit what we used to do. Although if I spoke to all three of those ladies now, they would, and I suspect there's many in the sector have this same dilemma, but they would say to me, Dad, there was many occasions you would go out and work with some young offenders on the weekend, which was my job, but they, as young girls, would see me working with... They didn't know I was working. They thought I was out doing great fun stuff with these young lads and not doing it with them. So there were certainly occasions on reflection that my two daughters would think, gee, you did a lot... I didn't quite get the balance right between family and work. Now, that's got nothing to do with rural, I suspect, Ross. I think we're all in that boat who work in this sector, is to make sure that we keep that balance right, balance between family and work, which touches on what you were saying earlier around the boundaries as well, that you need to be conscious of that. Otherwise, yeah, there's real risk you don't get that balance right.
Rob Foggo, who is retiring after about 35 years in the social services sector and is the outgoing CEO of AC Care. Ross Womersley, you're in the studio with me, CEO at SACOS.
On ya, Rob.
What are some of your memories of Rob, and also perhaps some things that you really admire about him?
Rob's been a great ally to SACOS and has served on our policy council for a number of years now and been a really strong voice for regional South Australia and, you know, reminding everybody consistently that the regions exist and there are some issues in the regions that are particularly important. But I think also his role as the chair of the Child and Family Welfare Association, he played a really important role in that context. And the leadership that he's shown more broadly, he has been involved in the sector and has continued to provide leadership around a range of issues that are really important. So we absolutely wish him
every success as he goes on to the next stage of his life. I understand that he's probably open to the odd bit of work along the way, mm-hmm. but and I think that you know, listening to that interview again, I just think I'm struck by where we ended, really, and that's this idea that sometimes those of us that are involved in delivering human services actually forget to pay attention to some of the most important parts of our lives, and they're our own families. Mm. And I, for one, am someone who has fallen for that trap along the way. So it's a really important thing to remember to bring balance to your life, and it will probably help your leadership in that context, because if you are balanced and you continue to maintain that one way or another, then that will probably be good for everybody around you.